Hello, welcome to the Sut Lithium Report. Today, we are going to really get into things about why is the Western world leading a life of dimitude and isn't it time to say no? But we are, this is a Christian show, and I always start with a reading from the Word of God. So I want to get into this, and today I've picked Hebrews 1, verses 1 to 2. God, who at sundry times and in diverse manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. Paul the Apostle, the author of Hebrews, starts this epistle differently. Usually Paul starts a letter telling, you know, who he's writing to, but this time he starts with something different. He starts with the foundation of Christendom, that God spoke to us through the prophets in times past. There are some who believe that God created the world, then stood back and watched everything and doesn't participate in the world or communicate with his creation. Those people are called process theists. And I always have a good laugh because the one I knew was really into this ended up having a personal experience with God and said, well, that was really stupid. But this is the cool thing. His creation, it is his, God's creation, namely us, cannot survive without being loved. There are actually psychological experiments that have been done. And sadly, you know, some children died as a result of this. If you're not loved, the human body, the human baby cannot live without being loved. We can't survive the isolation because we need communication. This God who gave us the need to be loved and the need to communicate is not one who keeps silent from those he loves. He sent his prophets. Then God came to walk amongst us in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. This God who loved us first seeks us out and provides salvation to us because of his love for us. A love beyond our own understanding, a love that is shown by the book we know as the Bible. Some people are calling that the passport, and I think that is a good way to put it. Dear Lord Jesus, thank you for not giving up on us when we screw up. You keep communicating your great love for us, even when we do what is wrong. Lord, you gave us your life that we might have life abundantly. Lord, your great love is a gift beyond our understanding. Thank you for not giving up on us. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I have Eric Smith with me today, and hope maybe there'll be others to join, and we'll see. Now, one of the cool things I have going here is this. I have the ability to share. This is why I'm hoping if you're listening on BTR, you come and you go to the link I put up there for Facebook. You can go to my Facebook, or you can go to Twitter and look up at Paulus One, and you can see this all visually. So I'm going to be sharing my screen here, and I think you'll be surprised. Some of these things I want to really get into, and I hope they just blow your mind. And let's see. I'm seeing a flashing screen. Are you, Eric? Are you seeing a flashing screen?
Yes, I am seeing a flashing screen. Click on the screen. Click on your PowerPoint screen.
Okay.
There you go.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So why is Western world leading a life of dimitude? Now, by the way, these two people are Jews. They were told they had to dress this way. They were from the Middle East, and Islam was ruling the area, and this is the stuff they had to wear. The purpose is humiliation. So when you're under dimitude, this is one of the things that happens is they tell you how to dress. And, you know, if that doesn't look humiliating, I don't know what does. And I am not sure if this is two women or two are a man and a woman. I honestly can't tell. But this is, you can go to YouTube. Go to Google, and you can type in Dimmy, and you will find these pictures. I found this one in multiple spots. I have other ones that I was looking for, and I couldn't find the ones I was looking for.
It looks like they're wearing earrings, Paul, so that might indicate that they are girls.
That's the reason I thought they were both girls. But, the Muslims' goal is to make you humiliated, so I can't really tell. That's their purpose of this. You'll see, there are some oddities that you'll see. The big fat thing around the waist, they'll have you wear clothes that mismatch. It's an actual still, what's so humiliating is it's an actual discussion today. I shouldn't say humiliating, but silly. It is a discussion today. You can go on, you can find material on this. So I just typed in Dimmy in Google, and this is what came up. A non-Muslim subject, a state governed according to Sharia, who is granted the freedom to worship and is entitled to protection of life and property by the state, although constrained by a special tax and granted the full legal status according to Muslim subjects. It's not anywhere as close to true, by the way. Occasionally has been extended to Hindus. No, it hasn't. Zoroastrians and others use a disparaging term for a non-Muslim who is perceived as behaving a conciliatory manner, which, Dimmy, giving in towards Islam. Protected. Well, when you learn what Dimmy means, it's really has nothing to, they might call it protected, but are you protected if they can take your children if you don't pay jizya? So that's what we're going to get into. What really is this?
Protected from whom?
Yeah, you're not protected from the Muslims, that's for sure. And you know what? Again, they say they're going to protect you. They might protect the land because they consider it theirs, but they are not protecting you. That is the problem with this term. In Arabic, they say it means protected. However, you're basically a hair above a slave. Because there's things they can do to you as a dhimmi that they can do to slaves. And this is where it gets bad. And we're going to get into that. All right. Next up, I wanted to read a little bit of this comes from Wikipedia. And just to tell you some of this information that's out there, I'm going to read the highlighted stuff. Again, this word, I'm going to go just a little bit higher up. It says the word literally means protected person, referring to the state's obligation under Sharia. Again, it's what they're calling people a protected person. In Arabic, that might be literal, but it's not what it means. Dhimmi were exempt under certain duties assigned specifically to Muslims if they paid the poll tax. Well, when you learn more, you're going to sit there and wonder if that's actually true. Let's go down to that next section. During the rule of Al-Mutaq Ali, the 10th Abbasid Caliph, numerous restrictions reinforced the second-class citizen status of dhimmis and forced their communities into ghettos. For instance, they were required to distinguish themselves from their Muslim neighbors by their dress. They were not permitted to build new churches or synagogues, but only to repair old ones. So they're not free to worship, as they just said. So this, again, which is kind of, you have to understand, the person who wrote this is most likely Muslim, and they're giving you contradictions, so you don't get the full picture. And that's the sad state of this. I like this part down here, this next box. Moderate Muslims generally reject the dhimmi system as inappropriate for the age of nation states and democracies. Oh, well, you know what's funny about that? Again, as I just said, you can find discussion groups on what they want the new dhimmis to wear. I've heard, well, we'll make them wear pink and green, different colored socks and things like that. I've actually caught some videos on this, which you sit there and I listen to it. I'm like, wow. But again, this is kind of a moderate Muslims. What is a moderate Muslim? In my statement, a moderate Muslim doesn't exist. In Islam, their statement is there is no such thing as extremist. There are no radicals. There are no moderates. It's just Islam. So, again, I would consider this piece misinformation, and it's there purposely. And again, let's go down to the last statement. The Hanafi and Maliki madhabs allow non-Muslims in general to have dhimmi status. In contrast, the Shafi and Hanbali madhabs only allow Christians, Jews, and Zoroastrians to have dhimmi status. Now, in general, it was Christians and dhimmis. I'm sorry, Christians and Jews that were allowed dhimmi status. And then the Zoroastrians, they kind of follow, but the issue, they don't always get it. And historically, they didn't get it to begin with. So there's some issues historically with that. So let's keep going. So at Khaibar is the first time we have, this is an awful case here where they make people into dhimmis. And this is a direct result of them being assaulted. They surrender and they give up. And they become dhimmis. They submit to, they basically submit. But as part of dhimmitude is you accept your status as a lower human being, a lower class. Some people would say it's like racism. I would say it extends farther. I guess here in during the time of before civil rights, I guess that would be close. Think about it. Is just if you think about people being treated like they can't come to the same restaurant, they can't sit in the same spot, it's worse than that. It's worse. So how about this one? It suspends conquerors' right to kill or enslave followers, their followers tolerated religions. So the purpose of dhimmitude is to stop conquerors from killing or enslaving followers. If that's what they're saying. Again, if you pay more attention, I'm going to recommend a book in a little while, and you're going to sit there and wonder if that's actually true. And this is all dependent. This is the catch. It is all dependent on your paying the jizya. It's a tax that you pay every year. All right. So what did the Quran say about jihad? So let's think about that first. Quran 8:39. Fight them until there is no more persecution and religion becomes exclusively for God. But if they desist, God is seeing of what they do. Surah 9:5. When the sacred months have passed, kill the polytheists wherever you find them and catch them and besiege them and lie in wait for them in every ambush. But if they repent and perform prayers and pay the alms, let them go their way. God is most forgiving, most merciful. Again, they're talking about you paying the jizya, which you would pay every year. That is, you know, some of this stuff is just some of the insanity that goes with it. It's just insane. All right, so I'm going to put this back up here. All right, come back over here. So Jews and Christians, this is from Ibn Tamiyah, who was a Hannibal jurist. He said, Jews and Christians, as well as Zoroastrians, Magians, he said, the closest I can come to that is magicians, but must be fought until they embrace Islam or pay the jizya without recrimination. So if you do any kind of resistance, you will be killed. There's no other level here. So if the Hindus were getting slaughtered, by the way, when they went into India, they were getting slaughtered so badly because there was no result. And this is the only time they started to accept Hindus to live is because they killed so many. And they got tired of doing all the killing, so they tried to make an exception. And you can find that by reading the Al-Tabari books. And it's pretty bloody. And that's my best way of putting it. Here we go. What is the alternative to becoming a dhimmi? This is what I've been saying. So if you didn't become a dhimmi during this time, during the conquest time where Muslims were conquering, you could be put to death. They could set you free unconditionally. They could exchange you for Muslims that had been taken prisoners, or they could just hold you for, and they can still do this today. Some just understand that they still do this today. You can be set free on payment of ransom. So you will see in the Sudan area on the seas, there are people still being taken by quote pirates who, when they get caught, they pay a ransom and they let them go supposedly. Again, they could reduce these people to slavery without, if you're not a dhimmi. Now, the question is, can a dhimmi be reduced to slavery? Or is their status much different than slavery? That's another question. According to Hannah Bali Wright. They're those such as women, children, priests, the old, the blind, the infirm, etc., who cannot be considered resistors or combatants will not be killed, according to generally acknowledged opinion, unless they have actually fought with words or deeds. Now, that's important because they consider the second level of jihad words and deeds. Words. I mean, so they're actually talking about if you didn't take part in the highest level of jihad or the second level of jihad, then you're a non-combatant. So if you're old, again, you're not supposed to be killed. But, you know, again, they can decide what to do. They just won the battle. So it's something to think about. They're not out, they're not saying you won't be killed. They're saying, no, that's the issue. So Islam believes it's in constant state of warfare. Now, this is one of the things I keep, whenever I look at Dimitude, Bat Yaor is my favorite book to go to. And she talks about this a lot. Dar al-Islam versus Dar al-Harb. Now, today, this is a recent map. I know it's pretty blurry and I blew it up pretty much. But you think about all these green areas. That is where Islam has reached between 6 to 100%. And, you know, that should shock you. And this is where they're feeling control. And still all these other areas that are grayish, under 5%. And this came out, I believe this map I picked up, it's 2 or 3 years old. And let me pull in, there's another young, we have Hussein here. Yeah, I'll put him on. All right. All right. So next one up here. Let me get back to this. All right. What does the jizya mean? Now, this is another piece I wanted to pull in. This, again, a lot of this information comes from Bat Yaor's book. Just going to grow this screen a little bit so everybody can see it. And I'm trying to get the mouse where I want to see it. Oh, the joy of having two screens. Okay. So Moroccan jurist Al-Maghili, who died in 1504, who was preaching, incited pillage of Jews and their slaughter in the Guara and Tarat oasis in the 15th century. He said this, "On the day of payment, they, the Dhimmi, shall be assembled in a public place like the Sukh. They should be standing there in the lowest and dirtiest place. The acting officials representing the law, which again, representing Islam and Sharia, should be placed above them and shall adopt a threatening attitude so that it seems to them, as well as to others, that our object is to degrade them by pretending to take their possessions. They will realize that we are doing them a favor again in accepting from them the jizya." You remember this again part is you do this every year so you can stay alive. So they don't take your children. So they don't. I mean, it goes on and on. But by the way, you're going to continue paying double tax and then anything. And they do this. It says they will realize that we're doing a favor again in accepting from them the jizya and letting them thus go free. Then they shall be dragged one by one to the official responsible for the exacting payment. When paying, the Dhimmi will receive a blow. This is on the back of the neck, people, and will be thrust aside, so that he will think he has escaped the sword through this insult. It's, can you imagine being beaten like this? You give a huge portion of your salary of your yearly income to them. You have to do this every year. And as you do it, you have to bow. And then they beat you on the back of the neck. I mean, some of this, you just sit there and go, oh my gosh, it's just hard to believe. So I want to read to you a couple pieces here from Bat Yaor's page 70. I'm going to give you two accounts, and this is from, I'm just right straight from her book, Islam and Dimitude, that I recommend everybody. If you don't have this book, please go buy it. Islam and Dimitude, Where Civilizations Collide, this page 70. Two accounts on the collection of the jizya from the Jews of Mogador in 1825 by an American shipwrecked captain. And a report quoted below from Marrakesh in 1894 confirmed that these measures were implemented in Morocco until the end of the 19th century. The Kaid Ouidi and the Qadi Malay Mustafa had mounted their tent near the Malay Gate and had summoned the Jews in order to collect from them the poll tax, the jizya, which they are obliged to pay the Sultan. They had me summoned also. I first inquired whether those who were European protected subjects had to pay the tax. Having learned that a great many of them had already paid it, I wished to do likewise. After having remitted the amount of the tax to the two officials, I received from the Qadi's guard two blows on the back of the neck. Addressing the Qadi and the Qadi and the Kaid, I said, "Now, know that I am an Italian protected subject," whereupon the Qadi said to his guard, "Remove the kerchief covering his head and strike him strongly. He can then go and complain to whoever he wants." The guard hastily obeyed and struck me once again more violently. This public mistreatment of a European protected subject demonstrates to all the Arabs that they can do without impunity mistreat the Jews. And this is on page 71. Traveling in Central Asia in 1863, Hungarian Orientalist Arminius Vambery noted, "The Jews in the Kante are about 10,000 in number, dwelling at the most part in Bukhara, Samarkand, and Karshi, and occupying themselves rather with handcrafts than with commerce. In their origin, they are Jews from Persia and have wandered here from Karzin and Merv about 150 years ago. They live here under the greatest oppression and exposed to the greatest contempt. They only dare to show themselves on the threshold when they pay a visit to a, quote, believer, which is a Muslim, and again when they receive visitors before their doors. These are the Muslims who insist that they have to provide for them. In the city of Bokhara, they yield yearly 2,000 tilad tribute, which the chief of the whole community pays in, receiving, as he does, two slight blows on the cheek." Usually it's on the back of the neck, so this is kind of interesting. Prescribed by the Quran as the sign of submission. The rumor of the privileges, according to the Jews in Turkey, has attracted some of Damascus to other places in Syria. Again, this goes on. And it talks about the additional taxes. These Muslims charge all the non-Muslims double taxation. So you can imagine, I mean, can you imagine trying to live? Everything is, if you pay for something, you go to the store, everything costs more. And this is the kind of thing with dhimmitude. And to me, that's really scary. When you think about today, in today's world, and they're talking about things like, let me get into that. They're talking about things like if you don't have the jab, well, you can't eat at a store. It's another form of dhimmitude, I would say, but this is not towards Islam. That's the difference. It's a civil rights issue, just like dhimmitude is, just like racism could be a civil rights issue. And for those who don't know, I was talking about clothing earlier, the concept of the yellow star that Hitler used to identify the Jews, he got that from Islam. He got that from dhimmitude that was still happening at the time. So this is something to think about. It wasn't an invention of Hitler. It was an invention of Islam. So something to think about. Jews dhimmi status. Non-Muslims under protection of Muslim law, covenant of protection was made with conquered peoples of the book. So these people had the book, okay? Which include Jews, Christians, Sabaeans, sometimes Zoroastrians. And I really have an issue when they say sometimes. The only reason they made the exception is because they were killing so many. They didn't really want to make the exception. They just got tired of killing so many. Adult male dhimmis were required to pay a tax on their income and sometimes on their land. The kara, karaza, I think it is. Restrictions and regulations in dress, occupation, and residence often applied. I mean, you couldn't even ride your donkey in the presence of a Muslim. You had to get off. So this is, some of this stuff is just mind-blowing. So I stole these two slides from another presentation I saw, which I thought was excellent. Legal treatment denied due process of the law. Yeah, okay. This is how the Jews were treated under as dhimmis. Not to, you weren't allowed to build houses, which might overlook those of the Muslims. Think about that. Denied ability to testify against Muslims in a court of law. So you can never charge a Muslim with a crime. So nobody, you're never in the right. You're always in the wrong. We're allowed to practice their traditions freely. Really. They're not allowed to build a new synagogue. And, you know, if you're not allowed to build a synagogue, are you allowed? I mean, there's things you're not allowed to do that would just cause problems. Again, you're not allowed to practice religion freely if you can't build a synagogue. So this is a, again, slight misinformation. Examples of dhimmitude in Arab countries. Caliph al-Mutawakkil of Baghdad designated the yellow badge for Jews. Again, that's what I just said. And this person cites Bat Yair also. Jews forced to walk in shoes of straw or barefoot when outside their ghetto in Morocco. Dhimmi structure allowed for Jewish contempt, gave room for Jewish communities to form roots and prosper. When you're stealing from them, I don't know if you're trying to give them time to prosper. Think about it. But that, you know, if they prosper, the Muslims make more. Moving forward, Zionism would be seen as some as an affront to Dhimmi customs. Yeah, they can. So you can see where I'm, you know, some of this was good. Some of this, you know, sat there like, yeah, Zionism, return to Israel. It's not. This is where I start to have issues. I want to play some videos. I'm going to stop share for just a sec. And I'm going to play some videos that'll surprise you. And let me just pull them up to get to the right spot. Just a second. I have some videos from recent times, and I think that they are very important because they speak to. Let's see. Let's play this one first. Oops. Okay.
توضیح مطلبانی که اهل کتاب از یک جهت شباهت به مشرکین دارند و از یک جهت
and on the other hand they are similar to the Muslims. Talking about the Christians. They see themselves as followers of the religion of God.
الهی میدونن خودشون رو
And in that sense, they are similar to the Muslims again. On the other hand, their beliefs and their actions run counter to the religion of God, are contaminated by distortions, and contradict the divine orders. They are similar to the polytheists. Therefore, Islam has set more moderate rules for them compared to the
polytheists.
But the people of the book do not accept these conditions. Islam has unequivocally ordered that the Muslims should fight the people of the book and put them in their place. Such people must be fought. They have religious, moral, and practical deviations. They do not submit to the divine rule and order. And they spread strife, they must be fought against until they stop the corruption and evil. And they're forced to pay the jizya poll tax. Now I'm just going to pull this back just to here. So I want to show you the beginning of this slide again, when it actually took place. I want to stop in that. So we can see that again. When was this? When did this take place? January 30th, 2021. It's only last year, people. So you see these things. It's just kind of hard to believe. Let me share the next one. And This one, this happened in 2013. Come on.
Sheed, and in times, my dear brothers of these people, they used to give income support 20 days in advance. SubhanAllah. Nowadays, you get it 2 weeks in arrears. Not that I'm on income support or job seekers allowance. We are on dawah seekers allowance.
That's Anjum Chowdhury.
We take the jizya, which is our haq anyway. The normal situation, brother, really, is to take money from the kafir, isn't it? So this is normal situation. They give us the money, you work, give us the money. Allahu Akbar, we take the money. Hopefully there's nobody from the DSS listening to this. They won't be able to recognize the voice anyway.
The reason why he said he hopes there's nobody listening is because he wants to continue not even attempting to work. He wants to take the money from those who are working. And this is, again, when you sit here and you catch some of these things, it's just kind of mind-numbing. That was what this is one of the reasons why he's dangerous. Okay, and I'm having some issues here, so let's go back. Come on. And I'm guessing I am frozen. It looks like I'm frozen. Oh, boy. The joy of... I haven't been frozen before. And I can't get... Let me see if I can get out of this. Let's see if I can get out of this, maybe. And am I back? And come on. Hopefully I'm back in. Everybody here? sorry about that. The joy of having too many things going, apparently. I have even the BTR froze up, which is something I haven't had happen. Both of these happen at the same time. Oh, joy of joys. And I've got to call into the station and get in, which is a pain in the butt. All right, so just a second. Some of these things I'm sharing, and you know, they're very factual information. I'm not sharing anything not hidden or things that shouldn't be taught in schools. I'm actually quite frankly shocked that some of this stuff has not been taught in schools. And I'm a retired social studies teacher, so I question why we haven't seen these. Now, this one here is just 2 or 3 years old. And I think this one is important too. So I'm just going to play this one. All right.
For example, open Bukhari, you will find the hadith that if you find a Jew or a Christian walking down the street, push them to the side. It is well known from what Umar ibn al-Khattab and the Khulafa al-Rashidin used to implement that the Jew and Christian was not allowed to ride on a horse when the Muslim is riding on the horse. They will have to walk. Allah, He said in the Quran about the jizya, that you that fight the people of the book. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, it's in the Quran, fight the people of the book and those who do not believe that what Allah has made lawful as lawful and what Allah has made unlawful as lawful until they pay the jizya and feel themselves subdued. The purpose of the jizya is to make the Jew and the Christian know that they are inferior and subjugated to Islam. Okay? In the Muslim state, although the Jew and Christian is free to practice their religion, this is allowed, but they cannot display their cross. And even in the time of Umar, they were not allowed to reconstruct or construct new churches. All of this is to create an atmosphere where it is encouraging the people to come to Iman and Islam.
Think about this. I mean, do you want to live in this kind of a neighborhood, in this kind of atmosphere? I get disgusted when I think about how the insanity of this. I mean, I look at how this is so evil, this concept of world domination, that you could become a dhimmi. You know, I sit there and wonder why we don't stand up. Where is the concept of being who we are? You know, and I'm just going to show one more slide, and and this will be basically it for my slideshow today. Let me just get there and show it to you. Just a second. The joy of having a couple of screens here. This is my last thing to share. It's time for Americans and Canadians to frankly just say no to dhimmitude. Canadians have given up many ways. I'm talking about all of Canada. I'm not talking about just the Christians or the Jews or anybody. They're allowing people to take them to court. Someplace the politicians have said you can't insult Islam, and they're allowing people to be charged with Islamophobia. Still happening in Canada. They're trying to make it. In fact, we just here in the United States had Ilhan Omar decide to press charge, you know, try to make it a law. She's doing what she can to get that going. Isn't it time to just simply say no? And I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Anybody have any comments? Dr. Kufar, phobia, radical, moderate, I'm going to add you in. Anyone have any comments about the idea of saying no to Islamophobia? To dhimmitude is what I mean, to dhimmitude.
I don't have a problem. I don't see why this is not being exposed. Well, okay, maybe I do know why. It's because we're being fed the watered down sweet version of Islam, and our politicians, whether they're doing it on purpose or maybe because they're just stupid, are falling right in line with the BS that you know, that the Muslims are feeding them. And what's going to happen? I mean, I'm going to be dead. Probably all of us here will be dead. I foresee another crusade happening. It's either that or the whole world is going to regret letting Islam take over.
And this is, to me, the big issue here is giving up. I mean, people are willing to give up their personal freedoms to have an opinion. That's the thing that bothers me the most. How can you be willing to give up your personal freedoms for an opinion? You know, this country, I know Canada is different. They really weren't founded on freedoms. They They didn't fight for their freedom, so they have no concept of keeping it. That's a story by itself. This is really problematic. So today, you know, my issue today is that we keep giving up. Ilhan Omar has gone and done something, proposed something, and all the Democrats approved of it. So your congressional reps, if you are, what, 80% of America, your congressional reps have decided that you, it's not 80%, it's closer to 50% in the House. They have decided that you don't matter, that you can't have an opinion that goes contrary to Islam. And that's the thing that bothers me. I mean, it will never pass the Senate. That's not even a question. But to say you don't have a right to an opinion, get upset. That's where I have issues. And this is the stuff that, I mean, the news stories this week, I'm just going to get into, get to the right. It's the joy of having too much open. Sorry. So I'm going to, I would share this in the chat room, but I can't because nobody there can see, can respond. So I'm just going to open it. All right. Okay. And so this week, I'm just giving an idea of Dimitude. The Taliban defense minister, this is from Jihad Watch, threatened to put 2,000 jihad suicide bombers at the Afghan embassy in D.C. So you have to ask yourself, this is in response, by the way, to something Joe Biden said. He talked about taking 2,000 of our soldiers and putting them in the Afghan embassy. Why would we put them there? Well, because they're pretty still much at war. There's nobody. I mean, it's dangerous to be there. So this is an article by Robert Spencer. You can go to pjmedia.com and see it. It says the Taliban's defense minister, Malvi Mohammed Yaqub Mujahid, recently responded to news that the U.S. plans to station 2,000 troops at the U.S. embassy in Kabul by presenting what he considers to be a tit for tat. According to the Middle East Media Research Institute, the austere diplomat tweeted, "If America wants 2,000 English troops at its embassy in Afghanistan, we also want 2,000 Fedayeen Mujahideen suicide bombers from the Fatah force and the embassy of the Afghanistan at the embassy of Afghanistan in America. 2,000 suicide bombers in Washington. It'll almost be like Congress, but bigger," he says. Now think about that. Is he threatening us? Is he seeing us as submitting to him that he's saying this? What the problem is they understand strength. They don't understand the concept of weakness. They see weakness, they stomp on it. But with Joe Schmo here, Joe Biden, he is not showing any sign of strength. So they want to make us look and feel small. And that, I think that's what we're getting to. And I see problems. Anybody else want to comment on that one?
Well, I would be shocked if Joe didn't agree with that. You know, but here's the thing. The left doesn't even understand. Again, I don't know if they're doing it on purpose or because they're ignorant and they think Islam is something else. But what they don't understand, now, the Democrats and Islam, they have one thing in common. They love control. They love controlling us. And Islam is all about submission. And the Democrats are all about you submitting to them. As we see with the COVID, with the jab and all that other stuff. But yeah, here's the deal. If United States was to become, let's say, Islamic, these very same people would be the first on the chopping block because they are seen as weak.
Yes.
They're useful idiots.
Yes. That is the correct term. Useful idiots. You know, I looked at that article and I sat there like, holy cow. I mean, How is that? Anybody else who would pay attention to this article might not get it. But the fact that Joe has the State Department there who should be able to translate things, and then at the very least could look at memory.org and see, oh, they're planning on putting 2,000 suicide bombers here. How should we respond? Let's see. Now, as Trump heard that, there might be a surprise bombing. There might be a cutoff of some kind of financial thing. But with Biden hearing it, I mean, I get the man has dementia, but he's giving what we could call a demi response of no, I mean, there's no strength. You can't, if you don't respond with strength and a threat, is the horrible truth is you have to respond with a threat back. And, you know, that's, I don't think he has a choice, but I don't think Biden has that within him being a man with dementia.
You know, you say one thing, the whole reason for what Joe Biden's doing in Afghanistan or whatever, you know, all him giving the Taliban money and not allowing you to talk about this and always cutting it off is there's one simple reason for it. And that is the million Muslim vote. There's a million Muslims. And if he could get all of them to vote for the Democrats, he doesn't care about anything else. You know, he'll be dead yes. before there's any consequences of all what he's doing. And so, you know, all he cares about is those million Muslims and to keep them in the Democratic Party and keep bringing in more Muslims, because and with the Democratic Party being their ally. And so that's all they care about. It's the same thing as they did with Kennedy did in the 60s with what was that law that, you know, about immigration, you know, that because it kept them in the Democratic Party. That's all they care about.
Yeah, it's exactly. I see it pretty much the same way. Here's another article. And it says Yazidi Islamic State survivor, latest victim of cancel culture opinion. This came out last month, December 18th. This past week, 2018 Nobel Peace Prize laureate Nadia Murad was the latest victim of the West cancel culture. She was disinvited from a book event by Canada's Toronto District School Board. Now, most of us who pay attention to what's happening remember this one quite well. I'm just going to read part of the article. It says, alongside colonialism, imperialism, and nation building, cancel culture is the latest of toxic Western ideas to be foisted upon the Middle East. This past week, 2018, Nobel Peace Prize laureate Nadia Murad was the latest victim of the West cancel culture. She was disinvited from a book event by Canada's Toronto District School Board. This may sound trivial, but it's a big deal. Murad is a member of Iraq's Yazidi ethno-religious minority. She was kidnapped at the age of 19 by the so-called Islamic State in 2014. ISIS at the ascendancy of its power, pillaged, executed, and sexually exploited locals with reckless abandon. In just her village, some 600 innocents, including her mother and six of her brothers, were summarily executed. Murad was taken to be one of the 7,000 Yazidi women and girls enslaved. Her first attempt at freedom resulted in gang rape by the savage jihadis. Her powerful story of successful escape and survival lent a voice to the world's voiceless victims of human trafficking and exploitation and led her to become the first UN goodwill ambassador on the issue. So Canada canceled her because it wasn't appealing to the Muslim community. I can say that this actually happened here locally in my area in Rochester, New York. We offered Nazareth College a Holocaust survivor. I mean, we were going to take care of all the expenses and everything. We had a Holocaust survivor was willing to speak at Nazareth College. Nazareth College called in their Muslim Brotherhood member and conferred with the president of the college we're talking about, conferred with the Muslim Brotherhood leader, the local Muslim Brotherhood leader, and they canceled. They denied us our ability to present that person. And this is the dimitude. Cancel culture, whatever, I mean, it defends dimitude, and it's just scary when I think about that. I do what I can, and each of Eric and Hussein and Dr. Kufar phobia and radical moderate and everyone else who's part of our the team here does everything they can to get the truth out. While we're fighting this willingness to be, this is the issue. We're fighting this the people who are willing to be dimmies. I'm not a guy who submits. I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I just can't. Being willing to submit and give up, I have serious issues with this. I don't know about anybody else, but anybody willing to give in?
But here's the thing, Paul. Are these people doing it knowingly, or they just don't know what the hell they're doing? You know,
and that's part of it. Yes, I'm going to go back to one of the things Usama Dakdak and I have been doing a series on the problem with textbooks. And one of the things when I find a textbook, a world history textbook, and I challenge you to do this with your children, your grandchildren, or nieces, nephews, whatever, cousins, textbooks, you will find this one problem. You know what it is? In the textbook, you look up in the index, you look up the word DHIMMI, D-H-I-M-M-I. And if it says protected people, it's crap. It's a crappy textbook. In fact, I would not even want my child to read it.
Now, because protect from what? What do we need protection from?
From them.
That's the issue. It's okay for them to say you are a protected people, and then they claim you're allowed to practice your religion, but you can't build a church. You can't build a synagogue. There's so many things you can't do that actually prevent you from worship. You can't ring church bells. You can't. I question whether they'd even let you sing or worship, you know, in that kind of concept. Will they let you gather together? I mean, again, there's all these little rules that won't allow you to do this. So it's misinformation. And then if you didn't pay the jizya, one of the things they would do is take your daughters as sex slaves. And they take your sons, even if you had paid the jizya. And they would be put into and made into janissaries. They would cut off your child's genitalia, and he would be raised to be a killer of other non-Muslims. Highly historical, but it's not taught in your local schools anymore. It's hidden. And Eric and I can attest to this because we taught social studies for a number of years, and he's in another state than I am, and I can tell you in New York State we never teach about them. Unless you're in my classroom, you don't learn. But this is the state we're in. We have so much misinformation out there. It's scary. Let me just get to one other one I had here. I saw this one, I think it's from today, on I have to go back. I think it's today from Jihad Watch. I have to double check it. Yeah, it's today. UK may deport boat migrant. Here's the word may. May deport boat migrant Afghan who raped and murdered a child. May? You know, they might do it. Almost sounds like you're reading the Quran. And Allah speaking. Doesn't know. All right. This is by Christine Douglas Williams. She writes, many illegal economic migrants don't only pose as refugees, but as child refugees. For example, 2/3 of refugees who flooded Britain in 2016 lied about their age and were adults. In Sweden last year, 5,460 of 7,000 Afghan child migrants lied about their age and were actually adults. Also in Sweden, since 2018, 90% of Muslim migrants from Morocco were caught lying about their age. In Austria, 40% of Muslim migrants lied about their age. Many of them were involved in high-profile crimes. Pattern's obvious. Some illegal migrants will say anything that enables them to stay in Western countries. And useful idiot politicians who fail to secure their borders don't care about public safety. Again, these are useful idiots. They are... They're sacrificing the lives of others for dimitude, and they don't get it. I think that's the big issue. They don't get it. You know, if you have a politician in your local area that doesn't get it, dare them to contact me. I mean, I'll give you my contact information, BEREAN_research@yahoo.com. I challenge you to do that. This is just tiresome in a long way. I'm just going to continue with this. Here's the truth about this article. Rachuli Zabaduli Adula was one of the migrants who entered the UK via the English Channel. Leonie suffered from not only her attacker, who should promptly be deported, but from the deep betrayal of her government. It doesn't help that Islam teaches that it's permissible for Muslim men to take infidel women at will. In Islamic law, according to Robert Spencer, the seizure of the infidel girl and their use as sex slaves is sanctioned in the Quran. Muslim men can take captives of the right hand, Quran 4:3, 4:24, 33:50. The Quran says, O Prophet, lo, we have made lawful for you to your wives, to whom you have paid their dowries, and to whom your right hand possesses of those whom Allah has given you as spoils of war. 4:3 and 4:24 extend this privilege to Muslim men in general. The Quran says that a man may have sex with his wives and with these slave girls. The believers must win through those who humble themselves. And again, this is a 13-year-old girl raped by a 23-year-old man, and they may deport. I'd rather see them cut off his cojones and then deport him. That's my opinion, but that's me. I mean, some of this stuff is just, you hear it, it's sick. You know, and I want things to be safer and better, but I don't know. I mean, some of this stuff, you just sit there and go, why? How is that possible? I don't know what to tell you. I'm. Why can't we as people of Western civilization stand up? Why can't we be
okay? Well, it looks like Paul jumped out of the queue here for some reason.
Yep, he dropped out.
Well, that's kind of peculiar.
Yeah. I
hold on, Paul, just a second. We were having a great conversation to you.
Yeah, man. Back in.
How long was I gone?
About four, just a couple seconds. Just okay. About 10 seconds.
So what were you guys? I'm sorry. I don't understand why people don't. I really don't get it why people don't see this. I mean, Eric, all I can say is you and I teach the classes, and there's no place in there that tells the truth about Dimitude. There's no place we talk about Janissaries. There is no place that we can. I see it as a huge missing hole in a person's education in America today. I'm guessing you probably see the same thing.
I do, absolutely. Because if you look in the textbooks most definitely do not. Well, there's two problems here. Number one, the textbooks. The textbooks, the companies that own the textbooks are bought and paid for with petrodollars. If you look at the majority ownership of the textbook companies in our country today, you will find that there are consortiums or whatever that own, whether it's not a majority of the companies that of these textbook companies, or it is a great percentage of them. The second thing is that our teachers. And you said this the other day, you know, we should have specialization in certain areas, whether it's world history, American history. Instead of having this broad education in history itself, you should be able to specialize in order to hold some type of certification in those areas. And if we don't do that, you do not specialize. You get this broad sense of what something is. I took a class. When I was in my undergrad studies, here is the textbook. Mr. Pig. Oh, there we go. This is the textbook that we used. The this is the actual textbook that we used.
Oh, wait, now, sure, put that up there. I want to point out something. Look at the name on that. John Esposito, Muslim Brotherhood member. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is the textbook that we used for Georgetown the class. University. Oh, so wow. do you think for a second that, and this is a specialization class in Middle Eastern history. This had nothing to do with world history or culture, but this was a Middle Eastern history class. The problem is that educators, teachers do not know about Dhimmitude. Why? Because it's not taught in the colleges. If you would try to teach it in the colleges, who most of these colleges get pretty large endowments, again, from petrodollar countries, they're not going to be allowed to teach it. And if they do teach it, that professor is going to be scurried out, shoved out the door and told to go about their business. So it's two fronts. You're fighting two fronts on it. The textbooks is number one, but number two, it's the teacher training. The teachers are not allowed to learn these things. I went down, and when I was teaching at the middle school, I went down and I talked to a seventh grade teacher where they would teach Islam. They would teach the different faith systems as a culture in their as part of their curriculum. And I asked him, what is the, and I looked at the textbook, and in the textbook, it says that Islam did not spread by the sword. It spread through the diffusion of trade. And I asked him, I said, do you teach that? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, why do you teach that? And he goes, well, it's because it's true. It's a state statement. Are you kidding me? You do not know how Islam spread. You do not know that Islam was spread by the sword. He goes, well, that's not what the books taught me. That not that my professors taught me in college, and that's not what the book says here. So I'm not teaching it. Dhimmitude. There it is, yeah. Right there.
And again, let's not forget, when the Muslim Brotherhood members came to the United States, the first place they went was to the colleges to change the way we think. And it's the same thing the communists did. They went to the colleges first. It's the reason why Obama has many college friends who were professors, and you know what, the underground weathermen were those friends. It's scary, right.
When did you see the other day the Michelle Obama is starting a new thing of signing up 1 million people to vote for the Democratic Party? Is 2 days ago or yesterday even, so the Obamas, their hands are in all of this, man, and they're still pushing it. And I think he's a Muslim. I don't care what everybody says.
Well, he is. He testified to it. He openly testified to it when he was running for office. He's no Christian. He was calling himself a Christian, and no Christian would say my Muslim faith. He's the one who chose those three words. There's no Jewish person who would say my Muslim faith. No Buddhist would say my Muslim faith. The only one who would say that is a Muslim.
I wonder if Steve would say that.
Hey, Steve, was that 1 million legal voters or 1 million new, over the border?
I'm thinking those are the guys that are still in the graveyard. The
question is very Islamophobic, and I just wish you'd think before you talk, man.
I mean, you're in. You and Paul, man, you guys are in the den of evil right there, man. You're like in the middle of
North Korea.
Yeah, that's the battle land right there. It's like just look at New York and California if you want to see how things get screwed up.
Orange County is the one has a little bit of a brain left. In California, Orange County has a little bit of a brain left. They've always been like the bastion of conservatism. And you know what's happening here, I think. I'm not sure, I could be wrong, but I think that the reaction that you wish you would see in places like Sweden or, where they finally wake up and they push back, I think that may be happening in Orange County where, it may push back on what's happening in the rest of California. So, I hope that happens, but I don't know, man.
I thought northern part of California was more like conservative.
The only problem is they don't have the people that we have in the South.
Oh, that's
all
true.
All the people are down here, Right. This is where the power is. But in the midst of where all the power, all the people, population is, Orange County is the one with the brain. That's where the brain is, The rest of it is, just money and politics.
it's I guess my biggest issue when I look at some of this stuff is the, again, how can you not know these things? I grew up with a world where we taught people the importance of telling the truth. We taught people the importance of researching and finding out the truth. But for some strange reason, that we don't have people doing that today. I mean, when you go to your undergrad days, there's really not a big push for research. At least there was when I was in undergrad school. They wanted you to learn how to do research, because when you went to your grad school, you were going to have to do research. That was the goal you were going to send you on. You go to grad school, you're doing research, period. But how do you come to the point where you accept not? Even in high schools today, I just retired after spending I actually spent closer to 29 years in education. And I'd say in the majority of that time there, I saw very few teachers pushing the concept of a research paper. I was doing research papers in grade school. They don't do them anymore. That's one of the things I don't grasp. I don't know, Derek, if anybody else was doing research, they taught you to do research. I mean, book reports was something back then. But, you know, when you wanted to learn something, they push you to do some research.
Well, if you have kids do research papers today, a lot of time, all they're doing is just cutting and pasting from Wikipedia. They're just cutting. I mean, that's the extent of their research. And then they get all indignant when you dime them out on it. And I learned that probably the second, third year. And, you know, like I was saying, I was only teaching eighth grade. But, you know, you ask them to do some type of paper, they're going to cut and paste it, throw it print it out, and then hand it to you and say, "Yeah, this is my paper." And they got words in there that they don't even understand. And you approach them about it, and they're like, "Oh no, I did this. This is my writing." And then you call home and say, "No, I'm going to give them a zero because they plagiarized this." Well, you can't give my, and it's just frustrating. So after a while, you're just like, "Okay, well, I'm not going to do research papers. We'll go ahead and just do in class research and have you hand jam something in the class." So you're right. The people don't do that anymore. We've gotten away from it. And I think it's because of the proliferation of information and the ease in which you can acquire it and access it.
So there's no border there. And so we stopped it. We've taught them how to do the research, and they can get it quickly. Now we without doing the research, you can't learn how to do analysis of it. And someplace in there, and that's the stuff that I would say that everyone here loves. I mean, that's what got me into an intelligence analysis. And we'll see. I mean, that's what got me into looking at the real truth behind things. And I have to admit, that still seems to shock me. I mean, there is a lot of truth behind doing research and getting it. And I have just a little bit more to go. I got at least one more article I wanted to. Yeah, go ahead.
Guys, God bless you.
All right, Steve. Thanks for coming, right, brother.
See you soon. I have one more article I wanted to do, and it is on the COVID. One more on this topic first. That was a good positive thing. It wasn't Dimitude. Let me just pull this up. Came from Algeminer. I'm never sure how to say that, but I think that. Citing anti-Semitic incitement, French Interior Minister orders closure of Islamic mosque in Cannes. They say Islamist, but we know there's no such thing as an Islamist. I mean, Islam is political, period. The article is by their staff. It says France's interior minister on Wednesday announced the closure of a mosque in southern city of Cannes, citing its promotion of anti-Semitic hate speech. In an interview with broadcaster CNews, Gérald Darmanin said that the mosque located in the iconic town of the French Riviera had been shut down because of an anti-Semitic remarks and incitement to hatred. Several Islamic mosques around France have been closed down during the last year as part of a government campaign against radicalism in this Muslim community. Darmanin said that the mosque in Cannes had also been closed because of its association with two organizations that were outlawed following the brutal murder of Paris school teacher Samuel Paty in October 2020. So that's something else to think about. I mean, I'm happy to hear that France is actually looking at the organizations they're affiliated with. I wonder what would happen here. I mean, you're seeing more schools being open to affiliating with organizations like ISNA, CARE. Yeah, just the kind of thing you want to do. Los Angeles School District made a deal with them to actually teach people, teach their teachers. And yeah, they were going to teach, they were going to do the anti-bullying program for a while. Yeah. Yeah, think about that. So there's at least one country that's somewhat waking up. I say somewhat because it's France. They have a new president who is running for, I'm hoping he'll be the new president. The guy who's running who is against this insanity. That's my hope. I can't say we'll get very far with that, but that's my hope. Let's see.
What happened to France with the Muslim issue in France, Paul? What's the percentage of Muslims in France today? 7-8%, 10%?
It depends on where you are.
This is true, but you have to look what happened to that country. That country got decimated during World War I. They sent their best and brightest to those trenches in the Somme Valley, and millions of their best next generation were killed. So they started allowing, this is when they started allowing, you know, this immigration in to help rebuild the country. And it's stuck there.
They actually made a deal. France and Europe as a whole actually made a deal with Muslims from the Middle East that they would accept X amount of hundreds of Muslims each year. This is back in the 50s, and Bat Yaor documents it. So that's one of the reasons why I do recommend picking up this book. Good. It's a must-have. If you really want to consider yourself becoming knowledgeable, this is an absolute must-have. Bat Yaor's Islam and Dimitude, Where Civilizations Collide. Now, Eric has it. I have it. I'm guessing Dr. Kufar Phobia might have it.
He probably has it on a PDF file because he doesn't. He doesn't buy books. I mean, he just
That's not true. I do have some hard copies. I actually have the Quran. Okay, and I have All About Muhammad. But after the rats ate all my books in storage, I just said, forget it. That was thousands of dollars that went down the drain.
Ouch.
And I like to search. So with a PDF, I probably have it. I would have to look at my 660 books.
Wow. This is a book that's absolutely essential. There is another one I recommend. I don't know if you've seen this one. And let's see if I can get it close enough. Wow. Arabia, the Euro-Arab Axis. This is also by Bat Yaor.
That's a better picture. That's a better picture.
That one I don't have.
That one you have to pick up because you read the first one. And then if you pick up Oriana Fallaci's books, The Blue Book and The Red Book, she refers to Bat Yaor. So I'm guessing you have those too. Mine are out on loan.
I do not have that.
Oriana Fallaci, you have to pick up her Blue and Red. That she is the top journalist, news person out of France. And the stuff she communicates, you just kind of sit there and go, wow. I mean, she interviewed Yasser Arafat. She basically told him to take a flying leap. And a few other words that were, you know, you sit there and wondering how a woman can get away with saying these things. But that's because she was like our Walter Cronkite. Everybody trusted him. And she had that kind of presence and power in who she was. So, yeah. So people were more afraid of dissing her than she was of dissing them. And she was always somebody who said what she thought. I want to go to this last article I have. This one's on COVID, and we'll see if I get banned from YouTube when I post this up for that one. All right. This comes from g5news.com.brazil. And I have to say, I read this article. I'm just going to share my screen so you can see it. It is shocking.
Is that the one about the model?
No. Oh. In fact, this came out today. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. And all right, I'm just going to go here and then. Can you see it? 15-year-old?
Yes, yes.
Okay. 15-year-old player dies during National Football Cup in Portuguese. I don't know how to pronounce. Gois. Pedro Henrique, athlete of Revelco Football Club, was admitted to the UPA of in a serious condition this Tuesday. This article came out today. Okay. He was admitted in serious condition. Sorry, they say cardiorespiratory, which is a heart attack, and could not come back. This is by the editor of the news source. Football player Pedro Henrique Oliveira da Silva Souza, 15-year-old athlete, died on Tuesday night, 11 o'clock at night, at the emergency care unit, 175 miles from the capital municipality, where he participated in the National Football Cup. For those of us in the United States and Canada, that's soccer. According to the city hall, the teenager was admitted to the health unit with a clinical picture of lowered level of consciousness, bronchospasms, airway contractions, severe respiratory arrest, cyanosis, lack of oxygen in the blood, and vomiting with blood. And as you read this article, it comes down to, there's a statement down here that all of the athletes between 10 and 8 had been ensuring that all prevention mechanisms were followed. So this is a child who had received a vaccination. Yeah, you just sit there like, okay, he had to have the vaccination to take part. And that's that picture of the boy and now dead. We have been reading about, and I'm talking about people who have just simply died or fainted, collapsed, who are professional athletes. And now we have a 15-year-old boy because they decided there's importance in jabbing our kids. So that's my last article of the night. Did you guys have any?
I just posted a link to yesterday, an 18-year-old Brazilian model. She also succumbed to the, jungle juice.
Oh, okay. Let me take a look. Yeah, and this I didn't see it. I didn't catch that one. And my bet is, did they say who it is? They say dies of COVID. Brazilian model. This is from Newsweek. Wow. Yeah, Valentina Boscardin, Brazilian model, died of COVID complications last week at the age of 18. She'd been fully vaccinated against COVID. Also healthy before falling ill with a virus. Reported that Boscardin had suffered a blood clot during her COVID infection. So did she have an infection? Did she have COVID? Or did she have a reaction? Because blood clots are a reaction to the vaccine. That's interesting. Well,
you and I know what happened. They're not going to come out and say it. You know, but if you look at what's happening throughout the world, you know, to young athletes like the one you just posted and to other people, you can see I'm almost starting to see this as a depopulation method. Whereas too many people are just having these complications that shouldn't have. And the only common denominator is they're all fully juiced up. You know, they took that Jim Jones Kool-Aid. And we all know what happened to Jim Jones and his people. That Kool-Aid worked.
So, I keep telling people to go to Telegram. I'm on Telegram now.
Yes.
Spitlifting Report is there too. And go to Telegram, and I'm going to tell you who to subscribe to. One is Dr. Peter McCullough. I love his work, highly scholarly, which to me, that is the big thing. You want someone scholarly to be able to give you the truth. He cites some interesting articles here. One is, let me see if I can pull it up. And I think I can pull it up in a different spot. But let's see, one of the ones he has here. Welcome the new protocol, the new product into the McCullough protocol, sequence multi-drug therapy. Supreme Court blocks Biden's COVID vaccine mandate for businesses, allows healthcare workers rule. Oh, that actually happened today. Wow. The Supreme Court did block. Wow. I can't tell you how happy I am about that.
Yeah, but they screwed the medical workers, because as long as you accept Medicaid and Medicare payments,
mm-hmm.
So if you work in the health field and, you know, the hospital or I guess the clinic or what have you, you still kind of...
There it is right there. Yeah, it says, conservative majority court allowed a vaccine mandate to stand for medical facilities that take Medicare or Medicaid payments. So that's all hospitals in general. It's only private hospitals that won't do that. So,
right.
Wow.
So you're still
and there's no nursing homes that won't do that.
Yeah. So basically, you're still going to see a major deficit as far as, medical professions, nurses, doctors, because they're not, you know, those are the ones that have quit their jobs because they're not taking the jab. Now, this might be great for the trucking industry because we were supposed to see like 30,000 truckers kind of pretty much quit because they were being forced to take the jab. Now, this involves the trade between U.S. and Canada. Canada might still say, well, if you want to, you know, cross the border, you're going to have to show proof that you got the jab. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to work.
There's a quote here in Alito's dissent. He says, I do not think the federal government is likely to be able to show that Congress has authorized the unprecedented step of compelling over 10 million healthcare workers to be vaccinated on pain of being fired, Alito wrote in his dissent. That's pretty powerful. I mean, he's exactly right. I didn't expect, I honestly didn't expect them to rule on this so quickly. I thought it would go next week, but that was a surprise for me. There is, you know, the thing I'm going to tell people, there's a little bit of some wisdom. You can look up, again, I'm recommending Dr. Peter McCullough's work. He's recommending 6 must-have supplements. I'm saying pick up D3. You want to pick up D3 and zinc at the very least. One of the reasons I say D3 is when the first studies came out and they were looking at things that people who had died of COVID or had severe complications of COVID, they found one common deficiency among them. It was a deficiency in D3. So again, I'm recommending you pick up D3. They say to get zinc, so it helps get the D3 into you. So that I actually do that each day. So there are some strategies out there. There's other things I recommend. Again, I do recommend going to Telegram, subscribing to Dr. Peter McCullough. And I'm going to say thank you all for listening. I think I'm fighting BTR as well tonight. So I got disconnected from both tonight. That was weird. All right. God bless y'all. Thank you very much.
All right. God bless.
Bye.
All right. God bless you guys. Thanks for inviting us.
All right.